Welcome to the Deconstruction Podcast. This is the podcast where we seek to deconstruct the narratives that define our lives in order to find the common humanity in all of us. We explore the intersection of psychology, spirituality, and society as a way to try to navigate the current geopolitical climate in a healthy and informed way. Here we also hope to explore the mechanisms of change within ourselves in order to experience life a little more fully. I'm your host, Rachel Spiker. As we begin, I want to invite you to take a moment to pause and tune into your environment. I currently am living on the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territory of the Sioux and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, and I want to slow down in order to honor the people who tended to and cared for this land for thousands of years, and invite you to be more aware of where you are as well. And now, I want to invite you to pull that awareness into yourself, noticing how it is that you are feeling at this moment. I can notice I feel a sense of delight in my chest and warm gratitude to be holding your awareness. However you are arriving, I hope that my voice can be with you throughout the course of this episode. Thank you so much for going on this journey with me. Today, we are joined by Vicky Grayson. Vicky is a registered nurse, a folk herbalist, tarot reader, and dream worker who is passionate about exploring our inner worlds through story, symbol, and ritual. To her, tarot and dreams provide a portal for reflection, magic, and transformation. Vicky, that is one heck of an introduction to describing who you are as a person, and I feel myself just bubbling with so much curiosity around almost every single part of that. So one, I'm delighted to be spending this time with you and really grateful that you're gifting us your time and wisdom to share all of these really big topics.
Thank you so much for inviting me here, Rachel. I'm really excited to share about my very niche and curious, odd interests that I think are becoming like more and more normal as time goes on, hopefully.
Yeah. I think there's this collective shift moving away from these more cognitive, institutional, rigid ways of experiencing life and this resurgence of depth psychology, spirituality, and mystery. And so I'm feeling so excited to hear your wisdom on it. And so I'm wondering if you can just open up by telling us a little bit about who you are and how you found yourself in the world of the transpersonal.
Well, it's kind of like a multifaceted story, I guess, as all stories are. But I would say my interest in tarot and dreams kind of started from an early age. I've always been a really strong dreamer since I was a child. And I would have interesting dreams and I would wake up and share them with my mom, and she really held space for that and allowed for me to be curious about my dreams and explore them and share them with a non-judgmental, receptive way. So I'm really, really grateful to her for that, because I feel that sometimes in our culture, in Western culture, people will just fluff dreams off as your brain just incorporating information from the day before and kind of not allow you to feel any excitement or importance with the dream.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful to my mom for that. And I had some really interesting dreams as a child. I would have precognitive dreams where I would see kind of mundane images, and then the following day or 2 days later, that image that I saw would kind of take place in the waking world. And it always freaked me out, but in an exciting way.
Wow.
Where it felt mysterious, and I was like, ooh, I like that. I want to experience that again. So that was kind of cool. And after my grandfather passed away when I was like 12 or 13, a couple months after he died, he came to me in a dream. And it felt really different. Like, I feel like there's kind of a spectrum of dreams, and that dream felt like a true visitation dream where I was very much in my own body. I was very much present in the space that I was at, which was my mom's childhood home. And my grandfather came to me in a doorway wearing the hospital gown that he had died in, but appearing much younger. And all that he said to me was, "Hi, Victoria." And he smiled. And that's all I can remember from the dream. But it left me with this beautiful calm, knowing that his spirit had transitioned on. And that was so beautiful for my heart. So, yeah, I will never forget that dream. I was like a young teen, and that sticks with me to this day. And what else? Tarot is a little bit different. I was kind of starting to get interested in tarot when I was 16. I got my first deck with one of my best friends, and we just kind of like to do alternative things. We didn't want to be like the regular kids in the crowd, so kind of being interested in esoteric things like that was exciting and just kind of came to us naturally. But I didn't take a really deep dive into tarot until I had a really like intense bout of burnout from working as a registered nurse. I was working in the downtown east side during COVID, and it was very emotionally, energetically, spiritually difficult. And just even without COVID, it's a difficult environment to work in, mostly because you feel frustrated from just seeing our healthcare system kind of fail people, and the housing crisis fail people, and not supporting folks to access like clean drug supply. I could go on and on and on. So I experienced a really intense bout of burnout. And during that time, I just, I took like 3 months off of work for my own healing. And I just kind of got obsessed with tarot. And I was reading tarot for myself every day. I was watching YouTube videos on tarot. And it really helped me to learn the tarot in a deeper way that I then felt confident to offer tarot readings to other people. And to offer like intro classes to tarot and kind of like fun, almost like a paint and tarot night, but you know, something a little different in the town that I live in. So that was a beautiful thing that blossomed out of burnout. And also during that time, I just felt like I was in kind of like a career crisis, and I was just praying one day, like I do, in a spiritual sense and in not like a religious sense. And I was just asking, like, can you just send me a sign of what direction I need to, you know, put my intention towards? And I was traveling at the time in the Kootenays, and I found this amazing book about dreams by this author named Robert Moss. And that book changed my life. It showed me that other people care about dreams, and that other people are inspired by dreams. They want to share their dreams. They find inspiration through storytelling and through curiosity, through dream work. And honestly, I've just become like obsessed with anything related to dreams since then.
Oh man, so many aspects of what you're sharing sound so important to the intent of this podcast. And what's really standing out is the way that your mom fostered this sense of safe curiosity around the dreams. Obviously, as a trauma therapist who specializes in early development and the impacts that it has, it feels so rich and alive in my heart to feel like a good nurturing and a good experience of like, oh, actually, we get to let this be, and seeing how this is like grown in your life as being something that's not only impactful personally, but is also now, like you said, blossoming into all these other opportunities. And even though that was for tarot, I know that dreams has become this other avenue of expansion for you, for your personal exploration, and also for this like collective healing that you're offering your community and beyond. So I would be curious to Let's stay with the dreams. Let's go more into the dream work if you'd like. I think as a therapist who knows a lot about depth psychology, I can speak to the unconscious symbology that arises in dreams and how we can use that and try to make sense of it in a way to access and integrate maybe these more shadowed parts of us.
Mm.
I want to hear it from your spiritual lens. Might be a psychoanalytic lens, but how do you use dreams, or why do you use dreams? I'm just thinking of the people who are listening, and you know, like you said, there's this really colonial Western lens on it's just neurons firing at the end of the day when you're sleeping to rejuvenate or make sense of, but there's not a lot of material there where I hear you saying, actually, if we can turn towards our dreams, there might be a lot of useful material there for our own healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many things that interest me about dreams, from a superficial sense to like a really deep transformational sense.
Mm.
So from the superficial, I just find them inspiring. I find the images to be odd, interesting. Sometimes I wake up from a dream and I'm like, oh my God, how did my brain think of that? That's so fun and weird. So it just kind of brings a lightness and a sense of joy to kind of what can be a mundane, you know, Monday to Friday type world that we happen to live in. So that's just fun.
Yeah.
And I also really love that the more I pay attention to my dreams, the more I can see this beautiful communication between my dreaming time and my waking time. There's like all of these kind of synchronicities, and I know Carl Jung has kind of talked about that before, where you'll see parts from your dreams in the waking world.
Wow.
And then parts from your waking world in your dreams, and there's this beautiful dance between both, and it's really, really cool to see. The more you can observe your dreams and dream journal and kind of like look back on your dreams as well. It's also very interesting to have a dream journal, and I've like digitized my whole dream journal. Mm-hmm. I have like 80 pages in a Google Doc. I've gone through all my like physical dream journals and just digitized them there. And that's been very cool because you can go through and search by keywords. You can look at, you know, certain dates. Sometimes there's a correlation with like a certain time of year where you have dreams in a certain theme that might be like a repeating theme every November or something like that.
Hmm.
So that's really just fascinating. But then, like you said, there's research coming out that dream work and lucid dreaming can be really helpful for folks with like PTSD. Especially if they're able to become lucid in nightmares, because instead of screaming and running away and being kind of in a victim place in a dream, if you're able to become lucid in a nightmare, you can choose to face your fear or your attacker or your predator or whatever face to face, and you can be curious about them.
Yeah.
And feel the fear in your body, in your dream body, but maybe ask the person that's attacking you, the animal that's attacking you, who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Ask what their name is. Mm-hmm. Ask what they represent in your psyche. Because as we're in our dream landscape, just the same way when we're in a psychedelic experience, we're in our subconscious mind.
Yeah.
And we're interacting with the projections of our subconscious without any filters.
Mm-hmm.
So some people, you know, I've tried to do this. I've had some nightmares where I was in this creepy cellar, and this clown, I always have clown dreams, this clown started to ascend the stairs in this really creepy cellar, and it was walking toward me. And I remembered in my dream, it was not a full lucid dream, but I remembered in my dream to not be scared and just to simply ask the clown who it is.
Mm-hmm.
and what they represent. So I was able to do so while still feeling a lot of fear. And the only thing is, I could see the clown mouthing a response to me in like a semi kind of calm way, but I couldn't hear what they were saying. And I think it's because I went to bed with earplugs in, and that kind of translated into the dream. So it's still kind of semi-transformed. I was able to have like an assertive communication with whatever this clown was representing. But I'll never know what the clown said, essentially.
Wow. That's a scary dream.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the clown dreams, and I've had a couple of them. So hopefully I can actually hear their response one day and see what's happening.
yeah, I hope that for you too. Keep me updated. I think you're pointing to something that's so interesting around being able to turn towards what's showing up as so scary and overwhelming in the dream or in your psyche to ask questions. It just reminded me actually, so I actually going to tell this story to make sense of everything you just said, where I used to love going to sleep because of my dreams, because I'm a really vivid dreamer as well. And I can remember all my dreams, and it feels like I live entire lives in the night, and it's actually exhausting sometimes, but I used to love it because it was so fun and like that kind of, you know, quote unquote superficial, but really imaginative, colorful escape, from the waking life. But then my dreams turned really, really scary, and I would have consistent night terrors for years and years. And, you know, I kept a dream journal and I would track them. And then one day just clicked, and my therapist was like, she was an Indigenous therapist, and she said she learned from her elders that when you have a scary dream, if you can turn to the nightmare or whatever's showing up in your dream and hold out your hand and ask, "What medicine do you have for me?" That's how you start to work with whatever's showing up there. And I was just like, that's so good. And it's, to me, that sounds like what you're talking about of like, who are you? Why are you here? What do you need me to know? Asking your names, like using curiosity to get the information we're looking for that can unlock our healing. And after I started to do that, I was able to see so clearly these five themes that kept repeating in my dreams that made them so scary. And then it's embarrassing. It took me so long, especially as a therapist, but they all correlated with real traumas that I had been through, and they were just kind of showing up in skewed symbolic ways. And then in real life, I was able to EMDR them, IFS them, use psychedelic work to really work through those traumas in real life. And the night terrors stopped. And then there was just one that remained, and I was able to become lucid in it just a couple weeks ago and actually like had this real powerful encounter of like screaming with like frustration in my dream, being like, I'm sick of this happening. And then it like cracked, and I suddenly had like all of this control, and I was just like, oh, I'm never afraid of, I don't ever need to be afraid of that again. Like, I have the control. That's out of my life. And then I haven't had a night terror since then. So really powerful stuff you can do when you start to get curious, exactly like what you're saying. But if I were to see a clown emerging from the cellar, I'm not fully confident in my confidence to face them head on. So profound courage there.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. I got like full body shivers when you said you just screamed in the dream space, because I feel like whatever we do in the dream space, especially when we are privileged to be lucid there, is like 10 times more powerful. Like you feel it in your body, you feel something click in your psyche, you feel like new neural pathways being built.
Wow,
it just feels so powerful. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that, I think that's exactly right. You feel the power of it, yeah, more experientially than maybe in waking life. So I know you've mentioned that using your dreams intentionally can help with shadow work or inner child work. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more about that process and what that looks like or how to do that.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of, at least for myself, this is definitely, I mean, the same in therapy. It's like a lifelong process, and it's a spiral kind of a healing process for sure. It's nonlinear.
Yeah.
I think for people, when they become curious of their dreams, you can kind of start to engage with your inner child through getting curious about the characters that show up in your dreams. So if literal children are in your dreams, trying to maybe the next day journal out what that child might have represented to you. Or if there's a child or someone in your dream showing up that you have an actual relationship with in the waking world, asking yourself what parts of their personality you might value the most, seeing how that might kind of translate into your dreams and your relationship to those values or those kind of like personality aspects. So again, it's kind of circling back to curiosity. And yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for integration if you can become curious about the stories that are being played out in your dreams and if there's kind of a repeating pattern or repeating motif that kind of keeps occurring. And I think if you can do dream work and partner that with therapy, then you've got a lot of deep reflection and questions that you've been asking yourself that you can then bring to therapy and explore those topics like with a therapist, because it can be a lot to decipher and make sense of. I think it's so helpful to talk to professionals. It's helpful to share if you have a group of friends that you can bring a dream to and kind of work through the dream together. I think that's really helpful as well. Healing, that kind of like community reflection piece for dream work is so important.
That's actually so cool. I've never beyond the thought of bringing dreams to therapy, to actually like have circles or friends and connections where you can come together and collectively talk about your dreams. That's a really good point. I like that a lot.
Yeah. My friends and I just started we're calling it the Dream Coven. And we're meeting once a month online and we're bringing like a couple people will share a dream, like two or three people. And then we go through it's called the Lightning Dreamwork Process. And that was developed by Robert Moss. And it's just a series of questions that helps you to get a little bit of a deeper understanding of your dream. And then the folks in community are able to share, you know, potential things that they might have noticed as you shared your dream, or like potential associations that they might have picked up on, but through the lens of not projecting any meaning onto the dream. So they frame it in the wording of like, if it were my dream, I might be curious about the clown and what the clown represents. Or if it were my dream, I would want to know more about the creepy cellar. So then they're kind of like offering a potential interest to you without projecting onto you, and you can kind of like take it or leave it.
What a brilliant and fascinating process. I love the opportunity for people to mirror back something that might just be out of your awareness to you and like help collectively cultivate that curiosity without needing to fix or put, like you said, their own projections into the interpretation.
It's been so healing. And like, we've only gathered twice so far, but with each gathering, there seems to be a collective theme magically somehow with the dreams. Like, everyone will share a different story. The first gathering, we had this collective storytelling of the dreams were expressing people's guilt about choosing their own lives that kind of went against the grain. Each story, each dream. And that was so healing to see. And then the one that we just had last week, there was this common story of protecting maybe like an inner child part. And then the fear of them dying. as well as the terror of like impending change, but then the hope and resiliency through surviving like really intense change. So it's just been so cool to see that there's all these like human experiences that we can share together through dream time.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds so profoundly sacred. Like what real human experiences, like you said, that can feel so overwhelming when we're left alone in them, and to come together and not only like see yourself mirrored in someone's journey, but to feel the power of the synchronicity around we're all coming together with this at the same time. That feels sacred and mysterious and powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been so special. And it's like, it's such a trust building thing for community as well, because you're sharing sometimes extremely vulnerable dreams with people. Like it can feel like you're really presenting a very vulnerable part of yourself into a group of people, and then to be held by them and for them to support you and ask questions for you to like know yourself better just feels so transformative and healing.
Adding a group element to the discussion of dreams was not where I expected this to go, but collective healing is so alive in my energy and passions right now, that to hear you are cultivating and encouraging spaces where people get to come together and have these healing encounters just feels so exciting and invigorating. Anything else about dreams that feels important to go into or to discuss?
I do have some like big dreams that have really rocked my world that I could potentially share. I think the one that I'll share today is a dream that I had this September before I was leaving for Greece, and I was actually going on a dream retreat with the amazing Sarah James, who wrote this book here. I just have a bunch of dreaming books beside me, but she wrote this book, Initiation into Dream Mysteries, Drinking from the Pool of Mnemosyne.
Wow, that is a title.
It's so good. I'll definitely like send you the info so people can check it out. Mm-hmm. But basically, she's been a lucid dreamer since she was a child, and she has done a ton of like independent research and wrote this fantastic book that outlines the ancient relationship to dreams and dream work and dreaming as a healing modality in Egypt and Greece and in other different ancient cultures. So she hosted a dream retreat in Greece, and we went to a couple of the Asclepian dream temples. And the intention was to kind of connect with that ancient energy there, and to also go to one of the dreaming temples and actually lay on the floor where people would go on pilgrimage and lay down. And Sarah guided us into kind of like a guided meditation where we were supposed to have visions and kind of receive a healing from the god of Asclepius. So the trip itself was amazing. I would highly recommend going. She's hosting a couple more in 2024. But the day, I think 1 or 2 days before I left for my trip, I had an incredible dream that was profoundly moving and also stayed with me throughout the entire trip in Greece and had a lot of like synchronicities built into it. So a couple days before my trip, I got this disgusting cold. I was like completely congested and it was horrible. So before bed, I took some medication to help me sleep. And I think it kind of enhanced my dream world that night, which is kind of fun. And I woke up around 2 a.m. after having this beautiful dream. So in the dream, I'm in this amazing gardenscape at nighttime. and I'm up on the rooftop of a building, overlooking the garden, overlooking the trees, and I have a bowl of different herbs that I'm planning to burn, like sage. I think rosemary was in there, some other plants, and I light them up, and I'm holding the bowl, and I can see the incense like billowing up into the sky. And as soon as the smoke starts to flow into the sky, these three old women elders start to approach the rooftop, and they are also holding bowls with their own medicine in the bowls. And they start approaching. We don't speak any words, but there's this exchange of energy of like deep love and profound respect that we're exchanging through eye contact. And yeah, they're bringing their bowls with their own medicine. They're starting to light their own smoke medicine. And one of the elders, I think it was maybe the second elder, she kind of like telepathically spoke to me. And she was like, I want you to know about the medicine of the opus tree. And the word opus was spelt in my mind. I could see the spelling of O-P-U-S over and over. Like it was spelt 3 or 4 times in my mind. So it really stuck.
Yeah.
And then she hit a thing of chimes to wake me up so I could write it down. And then I woke up. I wrote it down in my phone, and then I fell back asleep, and I was in the same kind of gardenscape. And I saw a little flower pot on the ground with just a little sprig of a green plant growing, a little sprout. And I picked it up, and the sprout right in front of my eyes began to twist and turn and grow up toward some kind of light. And it started to grow and turn into like a more mature plant. And then I woke up again. So when you have dreams like this, this is what I call like a big dream, where this is not like, you're not dreaming about going to work. You're not dreaming about walking down the street or like visiting one of your friends. This is like a big, big dream.
Yeah.
And immediately I started to Google opus, and I was like, okay, what the heck is opus? And a bunch of different things came up. So opus, when you think of like alchemy and transformation, the great work is called magnum opus.
Yeah.
So that made me think of like, especially the sprout kind of growing and like the beginning of maybe what is to be my magnum opus in the world, which felt very touching. And then delving more into what is opus as a plant, because I'm also a plant nerd. The prickly pear came up because the Latin name is called, I'm going to butcher this. I think it's Oputina ficus. And it's named after the town of the ancient Greek town of Opus. So I was like, whoa, okay, maybe this is related to Greece, you know?
Yeah.
So that was really profound. I shared it with the dream group. They were like, this is beautiful. And everyone is just as stoked as me, which feels so nice as a dream nerd. And we visited the Eleusinian mystery site in the town of Eleusis.
What? That's so cool.
And I had a profoundly emotional response to visiting this place, which I didn't feel at other sites in Greece. But as soon as we got there, I started feeling so much love in my heart. And I was like crying at some of the different points, which I didn't expect to really feel. And as I looked at the back wall of like where the old temple used to be, where people would go in to be initiated into the Eleusinian mystery school, the entire back wall was lined with prickly pear cactus.
What?
And I just cried and cried and cried because, and I could also And I know this might sound crazy to people, but I could also hear the joyful, playful laughter of the elders in my head. Because they knew that I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
They knew that I felt it, yeah. That I received the dream, that I received, like, whatever medicine they were sharing. And it felt so beautiful.
Mm.
So I had to tell the dream people about that as well, and they were supportive again. And a couple of the folks I was with, we wanted to make an offering to one of the wells that was on that site. So I had picked a little sprig of rosemary.
Mm.
And two of my other friends had different plants. And we all did our own offerings into this well. And I offered the rosemary just in gratitude to those beautiful elders that showed up in my dreams. And that just sent me this beautiful, like, interdimensional bomb of medicine.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
Wow. Full body goosebumps, enraptured with every word of that. Yeah. Like, I think anytime elders show up in a dream, there's something just profound there. And for you to be so receptive to allowing it to be impactful and to follow the little breadcrumbs to this unfolding, I'm nerding out / like so excited about the Eleusinian mysteries that you got to go to that site. And not only that, that's where like this big moment of encountering Opus, the prickly pear, happened. I'm just like, what? Which is actually so interesting because it's not so interesting, but it's maybe a synchronicity between you and I where we spent time together at a psychedelic retreat as we were finishing up our training. And my journey at that retreat was I got initiated into the Eleusinian Mystery School psilocybin version, but that's what it was. And you were the first person I told about that. And to hear, anyway, it's very cool. That's some big magic.
I totally forgot that until this second.
Yeah. Big magic happening.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that also bleeds into tarot too, because in the Eleusinian Museum is this giant, they call it I think it's the Stone of the Hierophant.
Hmm.
And the Hierophants were the like sacred high priests of the Eleusinian Mystery School. Mm. And in Greek, Hierophant just means like revealer of the sacred. So the Hierophants were in this kind of like quartered off area of the temple. And when you visit the museum, there's this like 6-foot tall, it was essentially like a stone doorway that was the opening to that part of the temple. And you can just see the inscription that reads Hierophant.
Mm.
And I couldn't even be in that room very long because like just the energy was so, you could just feel the energy from that stone itself. And it was profoundly beautiful, but it was also like almost too much. Yeah. I had to kind of give it some space. Yeah. But yeah, it was really cool to see my fascination with dreams and healing and ancient healing arts bleed into the world of tarot and how they've kind of honored the Eleusinian mysteries in the tarot. Mm-hmm. That was really cool.
Wow. What a coming together of this like woven tapestry of you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it felt really like the opposite of how I felt the summer before when I was feeling really lost and like coming back to myself, but also not knowing what the hell I was doing and not knowing what direction to go in. And yeah, it felt like this beautiful tapestry, like you said, of things feeling connected and feeling meaningful and feeling like I was moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like, you know, we've mentioned the word synchronicity, which for my listeners means a meaningful coincidence. And it's a little more complex than that, but truly all of these things coming together in a profoundly meaningful way that sound like, you know, I would interpret as like the universe seeing you and letting you know. Mm-hmm. Also like this confirmation of keep following the unfolding.
Exactly.
Which makes me think of something you said at the beginning, which was so beautifully worded when you were praying, asking for guidance of like, where do I put my intention? And thinking about the power of how when we focus our awareness somewhere with like this embodied knowing, like that there's real power to that. And for you asking for clarity of like, where do I focus my intention? It just really struck me as like a really beautiful prayer.
Mm-hmm. And just I think a lot of magic can come from sorrowful surrender like that, where you're just like, well, what else is there? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a portal when you're in that level of surrender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe we can talk about that a bit, because I'm wondering, you know, or imagining listeners hearing this magnetic magic unfolding and maybe wanting that themselves. And so how can people use the spiritual technology of tarot or dreams to help them connect with this inner knowing or intuition that might be that portal you were talking about?
Yeah, there's so many ways to kind of begin this journey for each person. And I think the magic, at least for my own experience, has just been finding something that you're curious about and something that you can do consistently. Like for me, I'm curious about dreams and it brings me joy to pay attention to them and to journal on them and to read about other people's experiences. And then for tarot, when you're first learning the tarot, it's like so overwhelming. There's 78 cards. There's so many meanings in each card. They're so complicated because they're like people. They're so multifaceted and nonlinear. So when you're first learning, you're like, how the hell am I ever going to retain this information and be able to, you know, have the cards talk to each other? And if, God forbid, a card comes out reversed, and how am I going to, you know, relay the reverse meaning? And, you know, so with the art of tarot, I would start small and maybe just focus on the major arcana first. So those are the 21 kind of main cards that are, I would say, the main archetypes of tarot. And they tell a story of the hero's journey from the fool to the world. So if you can kind of focus your energy on just relating to those cards first, I feel like that's a good place to begin. Or just maybe watching a couple good readers on YouTube and seeing how they relate to the cards, how they make meaning and make stories from the cards is also helpful. And then finding like little daily rituals that you can do that feel meaningful has been really impactful for me as well. So because I find it harder to be consistent with things like meditation and, you know, things that I know are good for my brain and my spirit. But my brain has kind of like framed it to be more of a chore.
Yeah.
Ritual has more of like a creative, playful energy to it for me. So that can mean burning a really special incense that you like, or like a blend of incense that you like. That could even be changing your sheets on your bed and doing that in an intentional way that you're going to go to sleep that night and have a really comfortable sleep. Putting a herb underneath your pillow that you feel really connected to. That could be a dreaming herb like mugwort. I have a really strong relationship with that plant. It's been really transformational for me in providing like more vivid dreams and helping to enhance dream recall for me. And it's also just a great herb for your womb as well. It can help to kind of regulate your menstrual cycle and things like that. So definitely plants are super magical and can help you to feel connected to things outside of yourself. I don't want to give any more examples because I feel like, you know, don't want to overwhelm people with where they can begin. Many, many fun options.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm finding so striking as I listen to you talk is the playful fun that can happen. I know a huge part of leaving the church that was really fundamentalist and conservative and rigid that I grew up in, I had such a like knee-jerk reaction to ritual, to prayer, to even like ceremony. And then thanks to medicine work and then my pursuit of being a witch and tarot, I was like, oh, there's actually something so fun about being able to figure out what works for me in a spiritual sense. And hearing you talk about the simplicity of putting sacred intention into daily activities that you have to do and the power that can be potentiated there, like changing your sheets, but with intention. And I hear like how I hear you describing this is almost tuning into what feels good for you, what feels inspiring, what feels beautiful, and letting that become the guidepost that you create these rituals in your life from, which is the antithesis of, I think, really institutional patriarchal religion.
That's so true. That's so true. And I also think, like, I'm thinking specifically of Catholicism just at the moment, but, you know, institutionalized religious kind of religious institutions have definitely taken a lot of ritual and ceremonial practices from Indigenous folks, from pagan kind of ways of thinking, from, you know, traditional people that have followed the cycles of the moon and the ceremonies and the herbs and the traditions related to traditional moon cycles and the cycles of the seasons. They've kind of like hijacked some of that cultural context and then just flipped it around a little bit. So it can be empowering to re-engage with some of those things by your own choice. Like, I love, and this is something I started doing since the trip to Greece, but I bought a big bag of frankincense when I was there, and I've been burning that on special occasions here, and that's like the number one incense that is used in traditional like Catholic ceremonies. So it's cool to kind of take that back. And it's also an incense that can enhance your memory and enhance your ability to, you know, be present in the moment and then also recall whatever ritual you're engaging with, be able to recall the emotions and the things that you were creating then later in the day or like later down the line. So there's a lot of magic to it and it smells great.
That's so funny you mentioned that. Last night I revamped my entire altar and then I lit some frankincense to like honor the reopening of the space and it like exploded and burnt so much and basically smoked us out of our house. My body was like, what's happening? It smells like a Catholic church in here. And I'm like, no, it's my coven. And it felt like a reclaiming of like, no, this is intentionally used in a witchy way that is not about Catholicism at all and reclaiming the magic of that. And it's cool to hear you say all the qualities of it because I'm like now marking that in my head to remember.
Oh yeah, so magical.
It is. I wonder if you want to talk a little bit about plants, plant medicine, and the way you use them again for your own personal practice of expansion.
Sure. I'm definitely like a baby folk herbalist. Like, I've done an online program and I just wrapped it up recently, but my curiosity with plants, I don't know, I guess I've kind of always had a bit of a curiosity around plants, but growing up, you know, when you're driving on the highway and you just notice like there's a bunch of weeds and plants growing and it kind of is a just a mass of plants. You can't really pick anything out. You don't really know what certain plants are. It's just kind of like a, you know, anonymous pile of greenery as you're driving. When I was starting to get into learning about plants, and especially just common plants like weeds and things like that, it was exciting for me to discover the names and the properties and the personalities of plants that grow around us. So then I can like be in relation to them instead of them just being this like, you know, discrete blob of greenery. And it's really cool to, wherever you're living, learn about the local plants and, you know, how they grow and if they do have any medicinal properties, maybe playing around to see if you can make some tea with it or make a little salve or a tincture. You don't have to get into super complicated medicine making, but it can just be really fun to engage with your senses and engage with your local land.
Yeah, thank you for talking about the way we can orientate on the land that we're living from and cultivate a personal responsibility. I think the more that I'm leaning into to medicines, but mostly like just plants, that they have a unique personality and a uniqueness that can feel like reciprocal. Like there's an engagement, I think, that can happen if we're open to it. And the way you talk about it in this embodied sense, it's not you gardening for yourself. It's like you cultivating this relationship through your senses, through your intuition, and through through nature herself.
Yeah. And I'm definitely fascinated by some of the poisonous plants, like foxglove is really fascinating to me. It grows really abundantly where I live, and it's stunning. The bees love it. The colorful, like the flowers are colorful and beautiful. And then we get a lot of like modern medicine from that plant as well. So the medicine is in the dose. I think that's like a Paracelsus quote. Maybe don't quote me on that, but the medicine is in the dose. And yeah, we get the cardiac medicine digoxin from the poisonous plant foxglove. So it's been really cool to like take my nursing medical lens and then blend it with like the plant realm and meet the plants that these medicines are derived from. And like aspirin is derived from the willow tree. What else? There's a couple medications I used to give in ICU that are derived from like very poisonous plants. So that's, yeah, that's been a very cool kind of holistic change of perspective.
Yeah. I love the like coming together of these two more holistic plant-based and then your medical training and being able to merge the two sounds like a widened capacity for your knowledge.
Yeah.
Really cool. On the topic of medicines, I'm curious if you want to talk about psychedelics at all in your journey with them as a tool of expansion, of a healing modality, or thoughts. It's a very open-ended question. Do with it what you will.
Sure, yeah. I mean, same thing with psychedelic medicine. This opportunity to take training with Therasil popped up during this time of burnout for me as well. And like definitely depression. Like looking back, I was definitely not feeling embodied, not feeling excited about life, not feeling like curious or joyful about things that used to bring me a lot of joy, not feeling like lit up.
Yeah.
And then engaging with the Therasil training and being able to have like our own medicine journey as each person, and then reflecting that back to our training community was so transformational for me. And I feel like, you know, my openness to trying things that are scary has snowballed since that experience. So that was profoundly great. And then my psychedelic experience in that psilocybin ceremony also felt very dreamlike to me, like in retrospect. And I had a really, really profound kind of meeting with my ancestors who were made of rainbow fractals of light. And we met on a bridge that was also made of light.
Mm.
And the intention that I brought to my psilocybin ceremony was partially to reconnect with my inner child.
Mm.
And to remember my authentic self. So I was feeling definitely very disoriented during this part of my trip. It was like coming on quite strong. But then once I kind of landed in wherever the heck I landed with my ancestors, I was like, okay, I'm going to ask them, you know, to show me my authentic self. And they were standing on this bridge and they were holding this circular orb, kind of like a mirror.
Yeah.
And I remember a few of them just slowly flipped the orb over toward me. And I focused all of my intention onto the mirror to see what was going to show up. And I expected to see myself, you know, maybe dressed a certain way for a certain career, mm-hmm. or like me as an older person or something like that,
yeah.
or even my inner child. But all I saw when they flipped that mirror over was them. And they were showing me that, like, I am them. We are each other. There's no border. There's no time.
Wow.
Like, we are profoundly connected. And I just cried and cried and cried because I really felt that transmission, like, right into my heart.
Mm.
And it was beautiful. So that was just one part of my experience. So I feel so passionate about psychedelic therapy and the profound transformational work that can come from it. So I'm working with people who primarily have depression and PTSD, who are seeking psychedelic assisted therapy with ketamine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been so beautiful so far.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people have like very dreamlike experiences again, out of body experiences where they fully leave their body. They go to like a different realm and, you know, they're able to sometimes have life reviews where they're literally reviewing the decisions that they've made in their lives, the choices that they've made. Or they're just having their projections kind of stripped away.
Hmm.
And they're remembering that they're just love. And, you know, that's such a common thing, is people are just like remembering that the most important thing is love and connection.
Yeah. Wow. Which is so invaluable when we can experience that instead of think it. Thank you for sharing that aspect of your journey. When you were talking about your ancestors turning the orb mirror around, I was like literally on the edge of my seat. Like, what are you going to see? Them and you, and like the never ending, endless energetic propulsion. I don't know. The oneness. Mm. Yeah. And I'm so glad to hear you're still working in the psychedelic field, helping others access this type of healing work. It's truly needed. And mm-hmm. we need healers who are doing their own work in the field, helping other people access these parts of themselves through the medicine. Anything else you'd like to share on dreams, tarot, plant medicine?
I don't know. I'm trying to think about for tarot.
Mm-hmm.
It's so related to psychedelic work. It's so related to shadow work. It's so related to dreams because it's so related to ritual.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting down when you're doing a reading for yourself, you're sitting down with intention. You're asking yourself a question.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeking like a higher level of guidance or understanding. And the tarot is beautiful because it communicates without words. I think that's the power behind it, is it communicates through symbol
mm-hmm.
and through story. And that's the same thing that dreams do as well. For the most part, you can still obviously have language in dreams, but sometimes it's nonsensical. So, yeah, for me, tarot, when I read for myself and when I read for others, is this like intentional ritual space where you're asking a certain question. You are providing yourself this ability to zoom out and look at your life or look at a certain area of your life from a bird's eye perspective. And then the tarot will call you out on your shit. And the tarot will ask you tough questions. And it'll be like, okay, so this is happening in your life. And here's a pattern of, you know, this is how you got here. Maybe this is an unhelpful pattern. And the tarot will call you out on it. Or, you know, the ways that we keep ourselves small because of fear, because of like, yeah, fear of judgment, other people's expectations, the tarot will ask you about it. And I love that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's really, when you work with tarot in that way and you're not scared of the questions that come up, same as in psychedelic work, when you're curious about the tough questions that are being asked and you go toward it, that's when like the big transformation can happen. And then when you kind of like integrate that knowledge and start to, you know, change your actions or your thought patterns daily based on your reading, is when you really get that transformational aspect coming through, rather than just like looking at the tarot as a means of outsourcing your wisdom or like outsourcing, you know, instead of looking inward for your answers. Some people will look to tarot as a way to outsource their own decisions.
Feeling a little called out right now.
Is that how you've engaged with tarot historically?
I think what you're saying is so interesting because I've never heard it worded quite like that. So dreams and psychedelic stuff, I'm like, bad trips, bad dreams. They hold the most healing. I can have all the capacity to go towards them. Tarot, it's like, I got five of swords and I start to panic, or I get the death card and I'm like, I have this weird like panicky reaction to the cards, that when you're able to say like, if you can let them call you out on their on your shit and then go towards what they're saying and integrate it in your daily life, like that's where the transformation is. Like, yeah, okay, I can get on board with that. And that's for some reason scary to me. And I think it's because maybe I have been outsourcing my wisdom to the tarot. I'm like, answer, give me this answer or give me clarity around this, instead of being able to let it become a tool for me to access my own stuff. So really grateful for how you just laid that out and explained tarot in that language and wording. So thank you.
Yeah, I think a good tarot reading for yourself and for other people is if you leave the reading with more questions than you came in with. Because you really should, like, there should be some homework involved with the tarot reading. Like, you should be, yeah, leaving with some introspective questions to kind of work on later.
That is so good. Okay, I'm going to be called up into that. So where can people find you if they're listening and they're like, who is Vicky? How do I get a reading? What are you bringing into the world? And yeah, places people can find all of it.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I have a website. It's www.iridincantations.com. And that's also my Instagram as well, irid.incantations.tarot. And I don't really want to be doing like advertising or tons of reels on Instagram because I just think it's kind of yucky. I'd rather just kind of build, you know, like a tarot and dream community by word of mouth. So I love sharing my passions about all of this work. And I love working with people. I love teaching tarot, doing tarot readings. Yeah. And dreaming, like, I'm happy to provide like dream kind of consultations with people where I sit down and we can review a couple big dreams or like troubling dreams and just kind of probe and ask more questions and try to help you to piece out maybe certain key things that, you know, you might not notice yourself if there's a certain blind spot. Mm. While also, you know, acknowledging that I'm not a therapist and encouraging folks to connect with other professionals in the healing space.
Those links will be in our show notes so people can find you. And I think the way that you have just shared your own journey as a means of accessing this kind of expansive knowledge that you then are able to alchemize in your own journey, it feels so authentic in a way that hopefully I would assume people will be like, yeah, I want to connect with that practitioner, mm-hmm. because there's a depth to it that comes from your lived experience of really being in integrity as you pursue yourself first in your own healing, which then I think gets to create this kind of like rippled overflow effect as others come and seek out your wisdom. So thank you for sharing all of that with us today, sharing your journey, sharing the ways you lean towards these places that we get to offer healing, and the ways that dream work and tarot and psychedelics and plants are all, I don't say modalities, that's the therapist hat, but all these different avenues or technologies or real relational encounters that you're able to embody in a way for you, for yourself and your growth. So thank you.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for being curious and letting me be a total nerd for a long time.
Here for it all. I'm leaving this conversation with more questions than answers. No.
Nice.
But definitely feeling that invigorated inspiration to dive back into tarot with a new lens of like, okay, you can challenge me. I've been resistant, but you can challenge me. Thank you.
I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you so much. I hope to have you on again one day.
Absolutely. Thank you.
As we come to the end of this episode, I want to take a moment to express my deepest gratitude to you, our wonderful listeners. It feels like a profound privilege to take up space in your awareness. Your support means the world to us, and it's because of your curiosity and openness that this podcast is possible. A big thank you to our guests for sharing their wisdom and insights with us all today. If their words resonated with you, I encourage you to look them up on social media or find their website. I also want to extend my gratitude to Jonathan Kiddo for his unwavering support and dedication to producing this podcast. And to all of you tuning in, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving a rating or review. It truly helps in this podcast world. Remember, the journey of deconstruction doesn't end here. Stay curious, stay connected, and join us next time for another episode of Deconstruction.